the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion. For we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. 32. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page. That's timeforanawakening.com, and listen to the live stream from the home page. You can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's blacktalkradionetwork.com, and listen to the live stream at that location. You can go to our radio network .com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. And the live stream is at that location. Or you can download TuneIn, to any of your carry-around devices, your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have that auxiliary cable. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook and Time for Awakening Media. The homepage is there. With the revamping coming very soon, a lot of interesting content there and podcasts of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, special guest is joining us, a good friend of the program, and he's back again with some interesting information as always. Pan-Africanist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to The Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper, Obi Egbona Jr., is with us this evening. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with the program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum at Philadelphia here at 7th and Arch. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Doing great. I'm doing great. I just checking on you. I hope you're doing all right. I know it's a little too cold for you, Richard.
I had said after Friday, I'm just going to shut up and suit up. that's about the best I can do. I had to turn the heat up.
Yeah, I know it. Yeah, just don't go past 90.
we'll be working with it.
Yeah, before we introduce our guests, I just want to read an announcement. The African Independence Day Organization Committee and the Urban Shaman production presents. Hold on 1 second. Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration, Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street here in Philadelphia. The donation at the door is $5. But children are admitted absolutely free. Special guest performances, speakers, a ceremonial lighting of the Kanara. Vendors as needed. And for more information about vending at the location, you can go to africanindependenceday@gmail.com. Email them at africanindependenceday@gmail.com. You can go to africanindependenceday.org. And send them a message from that location, or you can dial 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration at the Historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. That's Saturday, December 23rd. A donation is $5 at the door, and children are admitted absolutely free. Tonight, I'm glad to have a special guest back with us again, Pan-Africanist playwright and U.S. correspondent to The Herald, that's Zimbabwe's national newspaper. Brother Obi Ekbona Jr. is with us to talk about some things going on in December that is close to Brother Obi's heart, and then we're going to spin off into some topics dealing with the continent and our brothers and sisters here in the U.S. Let's go to our special guest, Brother Obi. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. as always, an honor to be on with you.
I'm glad you're here with us, man. And Brother Richard is with us on the line also.
How you doing, Brother Obi?
I'm fine, Brother Richard. Glad to be on with you as well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And I'm looking forward to our exchange and our interaction and what you have to offer.
Okay.
Hey, Brother Obi, let's first start with something close to your heart, being that you're a playwright, the Global African Children's Festival and Celebration.
Yes.
Is scheduled for December the 9th. Talk about the celebration. Talk about the origins of it. And also tell the listening audience how they can get involved in the cities where they are.
Oh, most definitely. Well, like I want to reiterate, how happy I am to be on with you this evening. It's been a while, and I'm glad to know that you've maintained the show, and those who struggle for our people understand the paramount importance of having platforms to share our labor and share our service with the masses of our people. And in order for that to take its course, we have to have those in the area of media who provide those platforms. Okay. And take that work seriously. So thank you once again.
Thank you, sir.
Of course, yes, this is our second year. We're having a Global African Children's Festival. And this year, the central theme is preparing African children to understand, embrace, and continue our liberation struggle. And we want to institutionalize this event. This is the second year in a row. And what we're asking is for African organizations, well, first of all, the focus is to take a look at all the challenges that Africans face, both on the continent and in the diaspora, making that 125 countries, whether we are talking about the 90 million Africans in Brazil, the 160 million Africans in India, the Africans who've been in Australia for 80,000 years, the 45 million of us in the United States of America, the 191 million of us in the Americas, and of course, the African continent, where we, at this juncture, we've eclipsed a billion people. So we want to take a look at how all the challenges we face, the political challenges, the economic challenges, the social challenges, the cultural challenges, how they impact on children directly. But in order to do that, history obligates us to take a look at the organized formations that work tirelessly and selflessly on behalf of our children. And one of the reasons that we felt inspired to do this is because when you take a look at this carousel of lecturers, for example, that move around United States borders talking about the challenges we face, they come into these communities and they have recommendations for what that community should do. But they don't take the time to sit down with the organized formations in those communities to find out what they're already doing.
Okay.
So we feel that what this gives us the opportunity to do is to connect all the organizations that are working with our children and bringing attention to their labor, to their service, to their contributions. And this way we begin to gravitate more towards contributions as opposed to just focusing on critiques and opinions. And that's what we wanted to do. So you're talking about harmonizing theory and practice. And, of course, because we are in 125 countries all over the world, we're never going to physically assemble in the same location. First of all, logistically speaking, it's not possible. Financially speaking, it's not possible. If what Kwame Ture taught us, that Africans are products of the richest continent in the world, but the poorest people in the world, we can't assemble physically in the same place. So it's incumbent upon us strategically to understand that, recognize that, accept that, and begin to plot a course, understanding that that reality shouldn't be a deterrent but an inspiration. So 22 years ago, I had the honor and privilege of being part of the first Million Man March when I was part of a youth group called the Pan-African Student Youth Movement. And our assignment was the day of absence and the day of action. And it's basically been overshadowed by that powerful and uplifting assembling of our brothers on the Mall in Washington, D.C., anywhere between 1.5 million and 2 million people. But they were 4 million, even according to the conservative estimates of the United States government, 4 million of us did not go to work and did not go to school that day, and organized activities in their communities in conjunction with the march. And a lot of times, so imagine if, whenever we decide to march in this country or demonstrate in this country or boycott in this country or organize any activity, you knew that the Africans in Colombia, 11 million of us, the Africans in Cuba, the Africans in Panama, the Africans in Brazil, the Africans in Dominica, the Africans in Grenada, the Africans in Jamaica would organize an event simultaneously with what you're trying to do. So that's what our focus is. So we are appealing to our organizations that work with our children on a regular basis just to have an activity in harmony with us that day. And flexibility is the order of the day. We're saying flexibility like a yoga instructor. So it can be a fashion show. It can be a chess tournament. It can be a basketball game. It can be a football game. It can be double Dutch. It can be African dancing or drumming, as long as African children are the centerpiece of whatever you organize. So we're asking Africans in the United States, but Africans all over the world, to embrace this. And also, we want to say something. As this is the 25th anniversary of us on the African continent celebrating the Day of the African Child, which is done every June 16th since 1992, and the purpose, the strategic reason for picking that day, of course, is because that's the day all over the world that we commemorate the Soweto Uprising, which took place on June 16th, 1976, where the children of Soweto took to the streets saying that they weren't going to speak the Africana language, the colonizers' language, anymore, and they were going to start to learn their history. They were making an emphatic demand. So, and the first one, of course, to die in that heroic demonstration was a 13-year-old boy named Hector Peterson. So they commemorate that everywhere on the African continent every June 16th. But the problem is that inside United States borders, when the African embassies have an activity, they invite the State Department. And obviously we can't partake because we have we feel the State Department, we feel the United States foreign policy is responsible for the exploitation of Africa, the rape of Africa, the plundering of Africa, the genocidal makeup of the political, economic, and cultural dynamics in Africa. So we can't sit there smiling next to them. There's not that much diplomacy that we can muster. There's not that much tolerance that we can muster, nor should we. So understanding that reality, we recognize we needed to have something completely autonomous of that, but at the same time would be a complement to that. So we have reached out to Africans in Zimbabwe. We have reached out to Africans in Liberia. We have reached out to Africans in Eritrea. We have reached out to Africans in Ghana. We have reached out to Africans in Kenya. We have reached out to Africans in different countries. As a matter of fact, in the Congo, they had a soccer game last year in conjunction with what we were doing here, and we were told by our brother Maurice Carney, the executive director of the Friends of the Congo, that they'll be doing something again. So this is not to upstage the Day of the African Child. This is not to duplicate that effort, but it is to let those African countries know that we understand the predicament they're in, but we're not going to play footsies and give the impression that we're going to be cozy with the State Department. We're not going to be cozy with the Democratic Party. We're not going to be cozy with the Republican Party. We're not going to be cozy, politically speaking, with any of these entities that are responsible for the suffering of our children. As a matter of fact, what we want to do is use this platform to introduce children to our resistance. We know that, for the most part, the dominant narrative of the African experience at this juncture in history is victimization. We want to make resistance the cornerstone. So we want our children not just to admire our greatest organizers, not to just to admire our organizations, but to prepare themselves to one day be ready to join the ranks of these organizations. And that begins with having them acclimated to the ideas and values synonymous with struggle, synonymous with our movement, and being able to appreciate the labor and work of our organizations as opposed to just the ideas. So what we're doing through this process is making our children get acclimated not just with articulating ideas, but equally as important, if not more important, executing ideas.
You know, Brother Obi, and that was one of the questions that Brother Richard asked me, was this in conjunction with that you know, the UN doing things, but
the Day of the African Child?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's okay. On the African continent. So, no, we've explained our position to the regional bodies, and they understand it. They for diplomatic purposes, because if you have normalized relations with a country, they have an embassy in your country, you have an embassy in their country. And those in a diplomatic capacity, they dot their I's and cross their T's when they talk about the relationships between those countries. We don't have that pressure, nor do we have that luxury. Okay. So we can talk about the Democratic Party the way we should talk about them. We can talk about the Republican Party the way we should talk about them. We can talk about U.S. foreign policy the way Daughters and Sons of Africa should talk about them. We can talk about United States domestic policy in relationship to children the way we should talk about them. So that way, even though the embassies are handcuffed diplomatically, but let's be honest. Because neocolonialism is the dominant paradigm on the African continent, many of them will act like the cat has their tongue anyway. But that's okay. We'll handle that.
Brother Richard, jump in, because I know that you want to address some of the things.
Well, I just wanted to clarify the point of the day. You say December. Is it December what? I didn't get the date.
It'll be Saturday, December 9th. December 9th. And in D.C., what we'll be doing is there'll be some dancing and drumming. There'll be some capoeira. And we, Mass Emphasis Children's History and Theater Company, will be doing our play, Same Neighborhood, Different Perspectives, a conversation between General Colin Powell and Kwame Ture, who both ended up going to PS-39 in the Bronx. And obviously, if you want to talk about a night and day, what better illustration? So we want to do that play. And the play starts out with the assassination of Sammy Young Jr. in Tuskegee, Alabama in January of 1966, which, as many of your listeners know and some of them don't know, is the reason that the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee has the distinction of becoming the first organization in this country, not just in our community, to come out against the Vietnam War. And their attack on the Vietnam War was very different because they didn't just focus on the war, they focused on the draft because they felt it was a subterfuge of white supremacy, as they to put it in their words. At that moment, we were 33% of the population, 33% of the front line of soldiers, but only 18% of the population. So that was very important. The second scene is Kwame Ture proposing to Mary Makeba, because as for people who don't know, they were married for 10 years. And then the children in that scene will sing her song, Malaika, which is a Tanzanian love song that she learned in Swahili. And the beautiful thing about her, even though she was born in South Africa, she sang African songs in multiple African languages. So they'll be singing that song. Later on in the play, they'll be singing Buffalo Soldier by Bob Marley, because as we know, Colin Powell raised millions of dollars to build a statue to commemorate the Buffalo Soldier in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. And the Buffalo Soldiers were hired guns for the United States military who slaughtered our Native American sisters and brothers. Also part of the play will be the assassination of Maurice Bishop, October 19, 1983, in Grenada, which Colin Powell helped mastermind. We also will be focusing on the first bombing of Libya, not Obama's bombing for 7 months in a row, but which was an ode to Ronald Reagan, who first did it on April 15, 1986. And the two-year-old daughter of Muammar Gaddafi was murdered in that bombing, that cowardly white supremacist bombing named Hanna Gaddafi. So we will be reenacting that. We will also be reenacting the bombing of Panama, which Colin Powell also masterminded, which was called Operation Just Cause. And the reason that he came up with that is because he said that even when our enemies condemn it, they'll have to use the word just cause. So it was a play on propaganda. It was a play on words. Also in the play, we will be highlighting when the American Indian Movement Grand Governing Council, which was created in 1968, had an armed standoff of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and Kwame Ture, representing the All African People's Revolutionary Party, represented the first African organization that went to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, was allowed to go inside, and that relationship and bond was established between the two organizations. We also will talk about we will also be reenacting the press conference when the All African People's Revolutionary Party was first introduced in this country, because we have to make the distinction between Kwame Ture and Stokely Carmichael. Many people, when they focus on Brother Kwame, they focus on his first 8 years of service to the people, which was his time in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. But Brother Kwame was also the founder, one of the founding members of the first Black Panther Party, the Lowndes County Freedom Organization in Lowndes County, Alabama. He's one of the founding members of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. And All African people, he was, of course, the honorary prime minister of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And then he also, of course, the All African People's Revolutionary Party is the brainchild of Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah. You can read about it in the Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare. And then he also became the head advisor of the Democratic Party of Guinea in Conakry, Guinea, which was the first political party created as part of the anti-colonial resistance on the African continent in 1946, created 3 years before the Convention People's Party that Osagyefo Kwame Nkrumah created, created 8 years before the Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, which was founded by Amilcar Cabral, who also helped found MPLA, Popular Movement for the Liberation of Angola. So when we talk to our people about independent parties, they don't have to limit themselves to the United States paradigm. They can look at Partido Independiente de Cola, which was the first political party Africans started in the Western Hemisphere in Cuba in 1908. They could look at the Democratic Party of Guinea, the Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, the United National Independence Party that was created in Zambia, or the People's Communist Party that the mother of the great Pan-African artist Fela Kuti's mama, Fumalayo Kuti, created in Nigeria. So we have models of political parties that once we decide that our salvation does not lie in the Democratic Party. So that play has all of those different layers and all of those different dimensions to it. So that's going to be our contribution to the festival. But, of course, there are going to be others there doing the dancing, doing the drumming, doing the capoeira. We've invited the co-convener of the First Million Man March and the co-convener of the Justice or Else March a few years ago, Reverend Willie Wilson of Union Temple Baptist Church. We've invited his children's choir.
Okay.
Hopefully they're able to make it. So it is going to be a variety. So if people want to do the same thing in different parts of the country and different parts of the world, that's okay. But if they can do something, like I said, sports related, they can do something that deals with arts and crafts, as long as they're showcasing our children.
Richard,
You said that I appreciate, and I think as you mentioned about the play, and you got me interested, maybe to want to just come down to D.C. to see it myself, because it sounds.
Yeah, that's right. You've never seen a play, have you?
No, never seen a
Mass Emphasis production, and yeah, that'd be fine, because there have been conversations about us coming to perform in Philadelphia. Our brother Russell Schultz, the son, he's talked to us about it. And a few others have talked about it. So we'd love to do that. And we also, if everything works out according to plan, we'll be doing part two of our campaign. Last year, as you know, we did a mini documentary, which was an appeal to our actors and actresses that based on the current climate, well, not the current climate, it's always been that way, but the time has come to go after, we've gone after the U.S. military, the United States police, the military-industrial complex, as it was once called, currently the Homeland Security Apparatus. They know how Africans get down on the front line. But we've never gone after Hollywood, the most powerful cultural instrument on earth. So we're making an appeal to our actors and actresses, and on television, in the films, and on the stage, not to play police officers, not to play intelligence agents, and not to play military officers anymore. And that can be their contribution to the movement against police terrorism and the movement against military repression and violence. And we have a tendency to separate the two. They should not be separated. The movement against police terrorism inside the borders of the United States is the same movement against the U.S. Africa Military Command, commonly known as AFRICOM. It is also against the financing of the Zionist State of Israel. It is also against the financing of military dictatorships on the African continent, in Latin America, and the Caribbean. And so we do not separate the two. And so we just, and you have to show by example. So the children are going to be the backdrop, and we're going to let Colin Kaepernick and others know, when you say that you're tired of police terrorism in the United States, when they say, are you against the military, you have to say, this simple, you are the police of the world. You police Iraq, you police Iran, you police Africa, you are the police of the world. So you don't come and say you're against police terrorism inside United States borders and then come and say that the military keeps you safe. Bombing, dropping the hydrogen bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki did not stop us from being lynched, did not stop Emmett Till from being decapitated, did not stop Dr. King from being assassinated, did not stop Malcolm from being assassinated. Bombing Vietnam, invading Vietnam did not make us feel safe. Overthrowing Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana did not make us feel safe. Assassinating Patrice Lumumba in the Congo was not done to keep us safe inside United States borders. As a matter of fact, it was done to show you, if you ever try to consider this course to liberate yourself, this is how you should end up. So think twice. So the military repression and violence that the United States inflicts on the world is a reminder to Africans inside the United States that they should think twice before they embrace the path of revolution.
I would like to, as a few of those, like us to kind of like really continue to develop. But the other thing in your opening that I also liked, that I thought it was a good organizing around this, using the Global African Children Festival, was the point of when you said that speakers going around the country can be able to identify what activities or find out what people are doing compared to just speaking to people. I think relates to children. That's a good point, because I don't see that happening.
That gets a little, you know, that gets sensitive for us, Elliot, because I live in Washington, D.C. up the road. Everyone and their mama wants to come here and speak in Washington, D.C. And we don't have to be on platforms with them. That's not even the point. But we're just saying, I mean, do you know what we do? And the reason I'm saying that is because now by no means are Africans in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area the best organizers in this country or the best African organizers in the world, but we are the most strategic. As a matter of fact, even our campaign dealing with telling our actors and actresses in Hollywood to reject those roles, the fact that it comes from Washington, D.C., look at the strategic significance of that. We see more police in Washington, D.C. in 1 week than the rest of the country or world sees their whole life. We have library police, public transportation police, the ATF, the DEA, the CIA, the FBI, the Capitol Hill police, Pentagon police, Secret Service, park police with unlimited jurisdiction. So we understand that. And as a matter of fact, when we chronicle through our history, when people talk about what happened to Brother Malcolm in the Audubon Ballroom, February 21st, 1965, thanks for having your intro with that powerful voice of his, people forget that the New York Police Department kept a file on him in conjunction with the FBI and CIA, established a bureau called the Bureau of Special Services. People forget that the man that was chosen to infiltrate the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League was a retired D.C. police officer named Herbert Boland, who was sent into the UNIA to set the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey up so he could be brought up on mail fraud charges, false charges, and deported from this country. The police were involved in that. So at different intervals of our history, you can ask Africans in the 50s, they can mention someone. You can ask Africans in the 60s. We mentioned Rodney King in the 90s. The young people in D.C. may say Deontay Rawlings. People out west to say Oscar Grant. Or way back before that, they'll say Marquette Frye, who was the reason that we had the Watts rebellions. So this is a part of the culture of this country. It is their framework. It is the way they function. So when we call for the ending of police terrorism, we're not only saying we are tied to the worldwide movement to end military repression and violence by our former colonizers and enslavers, but we're making an emphatic demand that the United States, as we know it, cease to exist. And a lot of people don't focus on that. And we feel, and when people always ask us, because I just turned 48, I'm always asked to compare our work in the 1990s to the activity of our children today. And what we say is a couple of things. Number one, most of the children, our children today, their points of reference are their grandparents, the 1960s generation. And we get that because we treat the 1960s the way Christians treat the Garden of Eden, like it's the beginning and ending, you know, the beginning of everything. So we understand that. But at the same time, they don't deal with their parents. So what I mean is they don't really have dialogue with those of us who came of age struggling in the 90s that are still struggling today. So I've asked them, your movement has Hollywood backing. Your movement has the backing of one of the 30th richest men in the world. But you haven't shut down a city. We saw a verdict of a trial that was captured on camera. We got angry with the verdict, and we brought the United States of America to a complete halt. This is something that has to be, but at the same time, we let it be known because we shut down Washington, D.C. We were doing it in conjunction with the trampling of military regimes in Africa. In the 1990s, Babangida and Abacha in Nigeria were overthrown. Mengistu, who had strayed from his original direction, was overthrown in Eritrea. Moussa Traore was overthrown in Mali, who the CIA used to overthrow Modibo Keita. UNITA, the CIA mercenary outfit installed in Angola to overthrow the socialist revolutionary government of the MPLA, was destabilized. RENAMO, which was created for the same reason in Mozambique next door, was destabilized. Mobutu, who assassinated Patrice Lumumba, who many consider the godfather of military neocolonialism, he was overthrown. So Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora made it emphatically known we did not want militarization anymore. And this is why when people ask us to talk about the U.S. Africa Military Command, AFRICOM, it lets us know while the world has gone from COINTELPRO to OINTELPRO, from covert intelligence to overt intelligence, we know that the United States prefers militarization. So they're attempting to remilitarize Africa through Boko Haram in Nigeria, through the recent developments in Niger. But when people hear us talk about this, we understand that one of the things that's going to come up, there are going to be a few questions. So one of them is going to be posed as well. Brother Obi, are you anti-war? We are against the wars of our colonizers and enslavers using us as cannon fodder and stool pigeons. So the Africans who fought in the Buffalo Soldiers were misguided. The Africans that fought on the continent as part of the King's African Rifles against the Mau Mau in Kenya were misguided. Go ahead, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
You had an installation called the King's African Rifles, and they fought against the Mau Mau and the Land and Freedom Army in Kenya. You had the Africans who joined the Rhodesian Army and fought against ZANU and ZAPU in Zimbabwe. You had the Africans who joined RENAMO and to fight against FRELIMO in Mozambique, or UNITA to fight against MPLA in Angola. Africans joined those outfits. No different than Africans who preferred to be slave catchers as opposed to running on the Underground Railroad. So we understand, and this is why that play, same neighborhood, different perspectives. Kwame Ture got our people not to go to Vietnam. Colin Powell had two tours in Vietnam.
Well, you know what, Brother Obi?
He volunteered, but he enjoyed himself so much in Vietnam that he had two tours. Colin Powell helped plan the bombing of Libya. Kwame Ture, with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the American Indian Movement, took the lead on organizing 150 organizations to defy Ronald Reagan's ban 30 years ago this year.
Hold it.
Let me ask you this. Uh-huh. How understand that the President Mugabe.
Oh, you know what, Richard? Do me a favor, because I want to transition into that. But I think a call or two might have some more to ask on the children's. I wanted to transition into that subject matter.
That's fine. We're here for the whole show, so
we joined the conversation tonight with Pan-Africanist playwright and U.S. correspondent to the Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper, mm-hmm. Obi Igbona Jr. Let's see if a couple callers want to caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, are you there? Let me put them back on hold. They might have stepped away.
Yeah, hopefully they'll call back. Call back.
Let's go to 816. 816, caller.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Elliot? Brother Oba, is it?
Obi.
Obi.
Yes.
Okay, and Richard, how you doing this evening?
All right, now.
Good to hear from y'all. Y'all been having some powerful commentary here the last two or three weeks. I just ain't been able to call in, man. Been having so many things going on, man, as far as people getting married and things of that nature. But on the subject, I heard Brother Obi mention how Boko Haram is an effort. Are they getting militarized? Because in the media, it appears that there's some terrorist installation that is opposition to some of the, like, America and some of the other European powers. Am I hearing you correctly that they're getting armed by them?
What I'm saying is that in relationship to that, that situation is being used, because what happened was the people of Nigeria elected a former military leader, Buhari. And I was in Africa a couple of years ago when the campaign took place, and I saw his interview on Sky News. I saw his interview on CNN. I saw his interview on another station. He didn't talk about his policy on education. He didn't talk about his policy on agricultural development. He didn't talk about his policy on health care. All he kept saying is, I'll make Boko Haram go away. So if Africans in the 90s let it be known they didn't want military neo-colonialist rule anymore, and the Boko Haram situation makes you feel that the only way you can be safe is to reinstall a military leader whose approach to government is military, whose outlook and orientation is military, then you feel you're trapped between a rock and a hard place. So that's what I was talking about, that Boko Haram and other efforts are being used to militarize Africa. But look at it this way. The other goal of the U.S. Africa Military Command, according to their mandate, is to, for all intended purposes, civilize our militaries, which is an extension of the missionaries coming in with the Bible, telling you that your indigenous spiritual systems were no good. You had to take their spin on the Christian faith, which is no different than when the National Democratic Institute or the National Endowment for Democracy comes to you and says your brand of democracy is uncivilized. Follow the model of the Democratic and Republican Party in the United States. Follow the model of the Labor and Conservative Party in Britain. Follow the model of France, of Germany, and Australia, and the rest of the European Union. So when you take a look at the track record of the wicked military regimes that have received unconditional support from the United States, for them to now come 30 years later and say that they have a mechanism. And remember, when President Obama's former national security advisor, Susan Rice, talked about AFRICOM, she said that humanitarian aid from the United States to Africa should come with a price. And the price is to allow them to set up a military installation in your country. But, and also keep in mind that the main satellite for this AFRICOM program isn't even in Africa. It's in Stuttgart, Germany, for crying out loud. So these are the things that we need to be paying attention to. So if we're going to talk about police terrorism inside the borders of the United States, it has to be tied to that movement and that work as well, if we're talking about pan-Africanizing the movement against military repression and violence. And also what that channels into is when President Obama, during his first inauguration speech, said that the might of the U.S. military must be matched by the might of the diplomacy. So you know that the diplomatic posture of the United States is an extension of militarism. So the blockade against Cuba, for example, is because you failed to assassinate Comandante Fidel Castro 635 times. The sanctions on Zimbabwe are because you cannot go in and invade Zimbabwe militarily. So you have this hostile, racist, aggressive, nasty form of sanctions aimed at imploding the economy and crippling the social infrastructure. So I hope that I dealt with the caller's questions.
Remote?
Question, yeah. So once again, but to start the original one, they're exploiting the Boko Haram situation to remilitarize Nigeria and remilitarize Africa.
Okay. So it seems like with your involvement, and you're over there on the continent, am I correct?
No, I'm based at Washington, D.C., but I'm the U.S. correspondent to Zimbabwe's national newspaper, and I have a 27-year track record of organizing with liberation movements all over the African continent, and through their installations and networks in Washington, understanding the strategic value of Washington.
Okay.
So I don't know. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, sir. And I'll definitely research myself, sir. As an African on this continent, how much, with everything, I'm looking at there's a humanitarian crisis in Central Africa. Mm-hmm. You have the Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and everything over there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Somalia right now, and you have Kenya and all these other places in Africa. How much should an African on this continent of America, not on this continent, but in the country of America,
You said it right the first time. This is not a country, it's a continent. And so you were correct the first time.
How much attention or, effort, should I be focusing basically my resources on getting us together over here as opposed to
The answer is both simultaneously. The reason that Brother Elliot brought me on tonight is because we're talking about having an African Children's Festival and celebration in Washington next month. But at the same time we're having that in Washington, there are going to be some folks who work with children in the Congo having an event. There are going to be some folks in Eritrea, hopefully, having an event. There are going to be some folks in Zimbabwe, hopefully, having an event. There are going to be folks in Cuba, hopefully, Venezuela, hopefully, Colombia, hopefully, having an event simultaneously. So what we want to do is, we are not going to physically assemble in the same place ever, but we want to make sure that our efforts, one of the best examples that's been kept from us, did you know that when the March on Washington was being held, that in Washington in 1963, Julian Mayfield, Maya Angelou, Alice Wyndham, W. Alpheus Hinton, Tom Feelings, and others marched on the U.S. Embassy in Ghana at the same time, that this was going on. So what we're saying is we want to get our people in the mode that when we do these things, we're doing them together, which means that we will build these ties. This year is, for example, the 30th anniversary of the assassination of Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso. Last year, we did our play about Kwame Nkrumah and Thomas Sankara, and Thomas Sankara's family came to the play in Washington. This is the 70th anniversary of Du Bois sending an appeal to the United Nations entitled An Appeal to the World, a Statement of Denial of Human Rights to Minorities in the Case of Citizens of Negro Descent in the United States of America, and an appeal to the United Nations for redress, what Malcolm was trying to do in 64-65, what the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey did with the League of Nations in 1923. So what we're saying is we're trying to break that cycle of being, this is the 50th anniversary of Che Guevara's assassination, the 50th anniversary of Langston Hughes passing away. But what we have to be careful of is being politically domesticated. The difference between a domestic animal and a wild animal is what? The domestic animal is trained to serve their master. So like when your cat gets off the porch or your dog gets off the porch, they eventually find their way back. And we may travel to Africa, but then we find our way right back into the Democratic Party, which propagates the notion that this is where we belong politically. This is where we belong intellectually. This is where we belong culturally. So that is what we are trying to break. And we break it by having activities like this Global African Children's Festival so we can tie in what we are doing here with what we are doing all over the world. Even your definition of America that you had, So the Democrats and Republicans, they can have their definition of America back. It's so fascist it would make Hitler and Mussolini envious. That definition cripples you from connecting with an additional 150 million Africans in this hemisphere who are in Cuba, in the Dominican Republic, in Haiti, for the same reason you're in Philly, you're in Alabama, you're in Georgia, the first form of public transportation, the slave ship. So what we have to do is we have to build these ties. But we build these ties through organized resistance, being more creative with our resistance, and we feel that the best platform is to use African children. Ain't a better platform than that right now.
And you know, brother,
thank you for your call, man.
And again, I like, and I'm going to reemphasize this because I think it's a good organizing tool with the Global African Festival, is the point that you said again, for any of us to be able to look around in the areas that we are.
Matter of fact, where's the caller? Where are you at?
He's in Kansas City. He's gone now.
Really?
But he's in Kansas City.
He gone. He probably still listening. Man, organize, connect us with some folks in Kansas City.
He's back. Go ahead, caller.
Connect us with some folks in Kansas City that organize children so they can pull together a quick event on December 9th. It can be a basketball game for kids. It can be a soccer game for kids. It can be a ping pong tournament. And the reason we're doing this, in case you turned in late, is because we want to show how these issues impact on the African child. But we want to bring attention to the organizations that are working tirelessly on behalf of the African child. We don't know them all.
Thank you, brother.
Right.
So help us through Brother Elliot, get my contact information, and let's identify someone in Kansas City. We've been talking to some folks in St. Louis right next to you. Hopefully they come through.
Okay, brother. Just send your information to timeforanawakening.com.
Okay, I appreciate it, brother.
Okay, talk to you soon. Go ahead, Richard.
That's what we're going to do with the callers tonight, man. We don't mind answering any of their questions. But we want them to identify folks and where they live at who work with children that would be willing to have an event the same time we're having in Washington, D.C. This is an emergency call.
And the other thing I want to pick up on, because it's something that I think for the hopefully I'm not being incorrect when I say this, the broader organizing thing, the working with, you said preparing our African children, because in order for them to be global African children, global African citizens, there are institutions that are truly developing African children right now at the primary school, at the preschool, at the homeschool, preschool, and the primary
school level. Shout out to Sankofa Homeschool Community, where I've been the African history teacher for 6 years. I teach 45 children. I have a class with children 9 to 12 and another class with children 13 on up. So, we teach Muhammad University of Islam.
Right.
We've taught at Roots Activity Learning Center and Public Charter School for 27 years. We just left. Oh, man. I mean, we teach in Alabama, in Montgomery, in Selma, in Lowndes County, and Marion. We've been there for 6 years. We're in the public schools down there. So this is what I'm saying. But it's the way we present the history to our children. For example, when we say resistance becomes the cornerstone of the narrative, this is what we're saying. Your image of the civil rights movement should not be fire hoses and dogs biting you. It should be focused on the organizations that were fearless, knowing that that's what they would encounter. When you focus on slavery, it shouldn't be on the raping of women and the fact that we pick cotton and tobacco from sunup to sundown, or chop sugarcane in Haiti, the Dominican Republic, and Cuba from sunup to sundown. No, it should be on the slave rebellions. It should be on the Underground Railroad. When you focus on colonialism, don't show me an image of one of us with a powdered wig on. Show us an image of those of us who organized in those guerrilla struggles, those of us who were part of the positive action campaigns in Ghana or the Congo or Guinea. Show us the examples of resistance.
while we were dealing with the black arts movement in this country, Sekou Touré created an African cultural renaissance in Guinea. Everybody that does dancing and drumming in this country, they may not even know that that's because of what Guinea did from 1958 to 1984. They told the story of their revolution in a ballet. And even though they went to the Soviet Union for training, their ballet ended up superseding the Russian ballet, the Chinese ballet, and the Cuban ballet. Focus on these images of resistance. So that way our children, and even when we talk about our great organizers, tell me if I'm wrong, we quote their words, we quote their insight. You can quote me a Dr. King speech, but give us the intimate details of how the Montgomery bus boycott was organized, or the movement in Selma was organized, or the movement in Birmingham was organized. You can quote Kwame Ture, but talk about the Black Power March in Greenwood, Mississippi. Talk about this being the 50th anniversary of SNCC coming up with the slogan, Hell No, We Won't Go, and victory to Ho Chi Minh, and how we ended up smashing the draft. Talk about this being the 50th anniversary of him going to Cuba. And a young Fidel Castro said, if imperialism touches one grain on this head, we will retaliate. And let that be used as an inspiration for us to fight to get the blockade on Cuba lifted. It still hasn't been lifted. And how Obama's high-profile field trip last year was used to make you relax, as they said they were going to relax the blockade. How the hell do you relax a blockade? So the next time the police throw you in a squad car and they say, tell you what, we'll relax the handcuffs, will that make you feel better? Do you think our ancestors that were lynched, they told them, man, that noose looks tight on your neck, let me loosen it a little bit? So why were we happy about the blockade being relaxed? We want it lifted. And as a matter of fact, since I'm talking to Philly tonight, let me say this. It was brought to my attention a couple of months ago that Dr. Umar Johnson went on the Breakfast Club and talked about Fidel Castro being a racist. And some friends of mine who have a show called Your World News reached out to him and asked him to appear on the show with me, where we would focus on how Africans should deal with Cuba. Should we be focusing on the blockade, or we should be focusing on racism in Cuba? And he ignored the appeal. I responded within 24 hours. And he had been on Your World News a long time ago. So if Dr. Johnson is more comfortable using this platform, Time for Awakening, to have that show where we can be discussing the blockade on Cuba and racism in Cuba so we can put it in the right context, we'd be willing to do that. Not speaking for you, but would you guys be willing to host that show?
Well, Dr. Johnson texted me about a week ago. I'll arrange it. No problem.
Text him back and tell him it's not a debate. It's a discussion, because the word debate has antagonistic overtones.
Well, because I'm open for the discussion. I think that those type of discussions
need to be had.
Supposed to be the cornerstone of our information dissemination.
No doubt about it.
Almost in an information a really conceptual desert compared to the moments that you're talking about, because we're not really being fed.
So text him back, tell him that I was on the show, and I specifically said, if he is ready, whenever he's ready, we will be willing. And the reason I'm bringing that up, this is not just rhetoric for us. You already know that. We've written the first children's play about the Cuban doctor. It's called Cuba's Greatest Army. That was our second play we ever wrote. We have co-produced three albums with M1 from Dead Prez, called The Battle Cry for Cuba and Zimbabwe, which you've showcased on this production. And we're about to work on the fourth album now. So we're calling on artists all over the world that are listening to this, all over the country that are listening to this. If you feel that the blockade on Cuba should be lifted, if you feel the sanctions on Zimbabwe should be lifted, we want you to make a song. You can be a hip-hop artist, a spoken word artist, a gospel artist, a reggae artist, and go to Battle Cuba Zim,
BattleCubeZim, ZIM.wordpress.com, so that you could get our music. And all we want to let Dr. Johnson know right now is that, look, you know how if you're in your car or you're walking and you see a construction site, you're not permitted to deal with that, right? I mean, you're not permitted to go there. They tell you that not to enter. It's dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a workstation. So unless you're willing to put a hard hat on, unless you're willing to put a pair of combat boots on and engage in that construction hands-on, whether you're pouring the cement, whether you're stacking the bricks, whether you're willing to get up on the scaffold, you don't go near that area. You stay away from it. So all we're saying is, for people who don't have a track record of doing any work with Cuba, for people who don't have a track record of dealing with work to lift the blockade on Cuba, that's a workstation. If you don't have a track record of doing any work on the ground in Zimbabwe, you don't have an interest in exploring avenues to do work on the ground in Zimbabwe, keep your comments about President Mugabe to yourself. That's a workstation. So always, and I'm not saying anything about him in particular, but we feel that that will be the benefit of that conversation. Because what we have is we have people too comfortable giving their opinions about things that they don't have a track record of doing any organizing around. Fighting to lift the blockade on Cuba, that's work that Thomas Sankara was doing. That's work President Mugabe is doing. That's work that Kwame Ture was doing. That's work that all these great Africans, with, and every time you talk about isolating, you create a, your rhetoric creates a climate to isolate Cuba, you're jeopardizing the life of Assad Shakur. So a conversation about Cuba, making reckless statements about Cuba, it has political ramifications, it has historical ramifications, but it has military and security ramifications. But for us, it's a workstation.
We're going to take a brief break.
Those who aren't willing to put the hard hat on, lace up their boots, and work with us, you know, the same way you make a detour from that construction site, make a detour from any area that's part of the workstation of the African liberation struggle. We must distinguish between analysis by observation and analysis by participation. It's got to be done.
We're going to take a brief break.
All I'm saying is, whenever he's ready,
yeah, I'll talk to him.
He's comfortable because this is his home.
Listen, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Pan-Africanist playwright, U.S. correspondent to The Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper, Obi Igbona Jr. I was behind on commercial. I was supposed to take a commercial break at 7:30, so we're behind on commercial break.
Man.
No problem. We're behind on commercial breaks, and then we got some callers holding, so we're going to get them on. So we'll just shorten up some of our answers a little bit. That way we can kind of move it along a little bit. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation. I'm sorry for some of the callers that dropped off, but call back at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. You know, before we break, let me say this. The conversation that we're having tonight was some information that has been discussed about America's involvement on the continent and what has been going on there. That's something that we all can remember because, you know, when we open the program, I make the statement about our people being destroyed for the lack of knowledge. And those are things that we need to remember when we're talking about, especially this holiday that's upon us, this so-called holiday, and some of our people getting on national TV and other areas talking about thank you for your service and things of that nature. We need to remember these things when we talk about the bloody hands that this country has and whether we should be having anything to do with it or praising the work behind it. Remember some of these conversations that we're having tonight and try to educate somebody when they talk about this day, this Veterans Day. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, join the conversation. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present. Our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m. with your host.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here. As many of you know, last March, when it was announced that I was no longer in the Black Muslim movement, it was pointed out that it was my intention to work among the 22 million non-Muslim Afro-Americans and to try and form some type of organization or create a situation where the young people, our young people, the students and others, could study the problems of our people for a period of time and then come up with a new analysis and give us some new ideas and some new suggestions as to how to approach a problem that too many other people had been playing around with for too long. And that we would have some kind of meeting and determine at a later date whether to form a black nationalist party or a black nationalist army. There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people. And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with.
The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community. White man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you who don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses under the pretext that you want to integrate. No, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, The community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer. The community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take your dollar out.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. We're joined in conversation this evening with Pan-Africanist playwright and U.S. correspondent to The Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper. Brother Obi Igbona Jr. is with us. Brother Obi, we're going to go to the phones.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple callers on hold. Let's go to 757, area code 757. 757?
I just got back online with you.
Yes, sir.
I had to stop. I was working myself. Look, number one, I'm 64 years old. My name is Otis. I'm part about you up in Philly. I'm down in the Yorktown area, and the young man...
Obi.
I can't pronounce it, huh?
Obi.
Sir, I'm 64 years old, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know if we're related or whatever, but I'll tell you quickly. I sit on the ground in a missile silo in the 70s, one of the first black guys to do that job. And I went in the military, in the Air Force, because of the draft. And then they stopped the draft. And I still had already committed to the Air Force. And I'm going to tell you, you're one of the few brothers I've ever heard that can make people understand there is no disconnect across borders. We have a global problem. We have exactly what the white man has used austerity and financial capital to hook onto all the other vices he had before finance took over government. And I'm telling you, you're... The historical facts and the way you hit it, I've just found you, but I'm telling you, I'm going to track you and see what's going on and see if I can't be in your presence. I'm glad to hear someone speaking the truth globally and at the front door. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Real Otis, thank you for your call, man. Let's go to BTR. BTR. You there? Hello? Are you with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No.
I went to mute myself.
No, I got you. I got you. You okay? Let's go to Scotty. This is Brother Scotty. Scotty, are you there? Let's put him back on hold. And let's try this number here. Let's call her. What's your name? Where you calling from? Let's put them back on hold.
They messing with the phone lines?
No, they're all right. Hey, Brother Obi, listen, and the callers kind of transitioned into some of the things that myself and Brother Richard.
What I wanted to say was, and the reason I brought that up about Cuba is because this is the first time in my 27 years of service that we're juggling campaigns. On January 1st, we want to introduce something. I also, 2 years ago, became the external relations officer of a group called the Zimbabwe-Cuba Friendship Association, which is a great organization on the ground, independent of the government of Zimbabwe, independent of the ruling party, ZANU-PF, but treasures the relationship between the people of Zimbabwe and Cuba. And then there's another organization that is affiliated with called ZICUMA, which is the Zimbabwe-Cuban Married Association. These are Zimbabweans and Cubans that are married to each other. And the new foreign minister of Zimbabwe, the Honorable Walter Mzimbi, he has a Cuban wife, an African out of Cuba. Just wanted to mention that. But anyway, on January 1st, we are launching a campaign. When the Millennium Fund was created to deal with HIV, AIDS, cholera, and malaria in Africa, the former U.N. Secretary General, Kofi Annan, contacted Comandante Fidel Castro, and he asked him, did Cuba have any financial resources to contribute?
And Fidel had to remind them because of the crippling blockade. They're not in a position. But he said to him, because of Cuba's outlook on life itself, they believe that the human resource is the most precious. And if Kofi Annan could identify resources, Cuba would be willing to deploy 4,000 of its best HIV-AIDS doctors, HIV-AIDS researchers, and specialists to be sent to the African continent, and they would remain in Africa until HIV-AIDS was eradicated. So we, and that's in addition to the 4,000 doctors that they already have in Africa, the thousands of doctors they have throughout the Caribbean and Latin America, where African life is vibrant and present, the 500 they have stationed in Haiti, the thousands that they have in Venezuela that have been involved in a project called Operation Miracle, which has played a major role in reversing the trend and cycle of glaucoma and blindness in Venezuela, but focusing on Africa. So we're saying, Brother Elliot, you know, we hear all these seminars that go on and all these conferences that go on where we're talking about our dollars, where we're talking about our resources, where we're talking about our capital. And it was Ahmed Sekou Touré that told us many years ago, it is not the adaptation of political action to economic action. On the contrary, it is the use of economic activities for political ends. So what would be a more emphatic statement at this historical moment, Brother Elliot, than us starting a campaign in the diaspora where we come up with the resources to send that 4,000-member HIV-AIDS brigade, Cuban brigade, back to the African continent at a moment when 21 million HIV-AIDS orphans exist on the African continent? And like our caller who called in the first one that would say, well, what about here? We're going to reintroduce a campaign, an appeal we made a few years ago. We want Cuban doctors. We're demanding that the United States government allow Cuban doctors to come to the following places: Native American reservations, prison hospitals and infirmaries, and communities that have had public hospitals and clinics shut down. And that last part is a working tribute to Booker T. Washington and Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois. The one thing that they agreed on was the health situation of the African. Booker T. Washington established Negro Health Month, and Dr. Du Bois wrote a journal called The Physique and Health of the Negro American, where he did a comparative analysis of health care for Africans at the beginning of the 20th century inside United States borders in comparison to when we were slaves. So this is work we've been doing for a long time. This is, so for those of you who got introduced to our struggle for quality health during the Obamacare concept, if that was your point of entry, we were doing it way before that. We go back to when we established the National Medical Association in 1896, when Africans couldn't join the American Medical Association. So this gives us an opportunity to change the landscape for healthcare for Africans in the United States, but also especially on the African continent. And we're calling on Africans in the U.S., Africans in the Caribbean, Africans everywhere, church organizations, business organizations, our fraternities and sororities. We're going to be reaching out to everybody to support that campaign. And once again, the objective of that campaign is to generate the capital to send a 4,000-member HIV-AIDS brigade coming out of revolutionary Cuba to the African continent to go and eradicate AIDS. And Cuba has the lowest HIV-AIDS rate in the world, in case anyone's out there wondering about their qualifications. It was no way I could not get off the show and not mention that. And that's the campaign that we're promoting in conjunction with the album that will be coming out, which would be our fourth volume, Battle Cry for Cuba and Zimbabwe, which means we would have done four albums since December of 2013. Contributions over critiques. Articulation of ideas followed up by execution of ideas, which many people don't do.
Let's go to BTR again. BTR, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right. Greetings to you, Elliot and Richard, and to your esteemed guest, Brother Obi. I wanted to comment on a couple of things brought up. The first thing is I want to say this. Dr. Umar wasn't the only Afro-descended person with a large audience who made those ignorant comments about Fidel Castro. And in my opinion, Some of these people, we don't even need to address them. They say things for the shock value of it because they know. And that was said around the time that Fidel Castro had passed. So anybody who has done research and has read how Cuba played a role in the decolonization of Africa and helping those countries seek their independence, who knows how he has given sanctuary to Black Panthers and political, well, I can't call them political prisoners, former political prisoners like Assata Shakur, who escaped and was given asylum there. So anybody who would say that Fidel Castro is racist based just solely on his phenotype and not his actions, to me, is not even worth addressing. That tells me that person hasn't done any research and is very limited in his study of the African struggle around the globe if they don't know that. The other thing that I wanted to bring up is I keep hearing you, brother, talk about slavery in the past tense. And don't get me wrong, this is not criticism. This is not criticism of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. No point in this nation's or this corporation since the federal government incorporated in 1861. At no point in this corporation's history did it ever abolish slavery. We were just in Washington, D.C. for a human prisoners, a millions for prisoners human rights march and rally. We had the rally at Lafayette Park where we had a number of modern day abolitionists speaking to the people about the very 13th was a compromise with the South to allow them to continue to practice slavery in another form and fashion. And we call it today, mass incarceration is really a continuation of slavery. And that's just something that I try to bring up anytime I have an opportunity and I speak to someone, is please consider that that slavery was never abolished. And we still got work to do on that front as well.
Where are you based?
I'm based just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina.
We're asking everyone that calls in. The reason we're on tonight, brother, is because we're organizing a global African children's festival and celebration on December 9th. And we're doing something in D.C., of course. But we're asking Africans all over the world who work with children to have an activity at the same time we're having it in Washington, D.C. So if you know some people in the Charlotte area who are doing that work, we would love to connect with them. So I just wanted to say that to you. And I had the honor of being in Charlotte a couple of years ago with Reverend Dr. Madeline McClenny. And those who were dealing with work with the prison industrial complex and the role that the church can play. So I was there with them in Charlotte a couple of years ago. Let me just say, I understand exactly what you're saying. No, when we say we're talking about chattel slavery, but capitalism is the ultimate illustration of slavery. So we have gone from forced free labor to exploited labor. So, of course, we're emphatically against the capitalist system. And as Kwame Nkrumah told us, capitalism is the gentleman's method of slavery. So we understand exactly what you're saying. And not only that, we tie the struggles dealing with that to, of course, the decolonization process on the African continent. We just mentioned him because it was a brother on Your World News, Dr. Umar Johnson, who tried to facilitate a conversation between us. But we don't discriminate, brother. We look at that list that was created to deal, and it was 60 organizers in this country that signed it, talking about racism in Cuba about 6 years ago. Cornel West signed it. Jeremiah Wright signed it. Susan Taylor from Essence Magazine signed it. Malefi Asante had initially signed it, but then he took his name off of it, to his credit. Conrad Worrell from the National Black United Front signed it. So Kathleen Cleaver signed it. And this is just off the top of my head. So it doesn't have to be him. It can be any of them. And all we would do, brother, is use that platform to talk about the practical work we are doing. because so we're sending kids to medical school there. We have three albums of music with artists from all over the world, a project we built from scratch to fight for the lifting of the blockade. So it would just be a platform to intensify our work. We don't get into conversations for the sake of conversations.
Yes, I understand, but I think, brother, that there's miscommunication between us. Yeah. I don't see slavery as ever ending. You can call
it. No, it hasn't. It has not ended. We went from forced-free labor. We went from forced-free labor to exploited labor. It's still the institutional mechanism.
If I may, I'm not talking about people whose labor is being exploited through minimum wage. I'm talking about brothers and sisters who are captive. See, I don't call it police violence. I call it slave catcher violence because, again, legally, this country never abolished slavery. The 13th Amendment says slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished except as a punishment for crime. Immediately following the 13th Amendment, they came up with the black codes to target our people, to put them back in, to put them in prison.
Most definitely. And that's what we're saying. We're in agreement with you. It's just that the language we're using. But we're saying, though, that our goal is to bring is to smash the capitalist system. Now, whatever language that people are we talk about that too. It's also part and parcel of the work being done in the African continent as well, which we are part of, because most of the time when we talk about slavery, it's discussed in isolation from colonialism. And we have gone from settler colonialism in Africa to neocolonialism. And a lot of times people don't qualify the difference, because when we say colonialism in Africa, people will say, oh, that's over. We're independent in Africa. But that's because they don't have exposure to neocolonialism. And then we know we've gone from military neocolonialism to civilian neocolonialism. So what we're saying is the enemy has looked at their creative ways to tighten their grip on us, but we're just talking about it in the context of the intensification of our resistance. And that usually is part and parcel of the demographic that we strategically target. It's obvious that you target the demographic you do because it's connected to your organized work. And the language we use is a direct result of the demographic that we target. But we are together. Our ships sail in the same direction.
Right. And we do have a representative who will be traveling to Ghana after we were invited. I'm not able to make that trip because I have to stay here and manage.
One of the people who work with you is organizing an activity in Atlanta for us. And that would be Brother Keyote Scarborough, who spoke at your event, Brother Tut. I was just on WRFG in Atlanta with him the other day by phone. So all I'm saying, though, is that because one of the things we want to talk about is how the dynamics in prison impact on our children. And we want to bring attention to the organizations that are doing that work who are willing to highlight that. So please, by all means, the organization that you're part of and the networks you're connected to, if in their areas they are able to have a children's activity on December 9th, their own activity the way they want to, by all means do it. Because all we want to show is how all the problems and challenges that Africans face at home and abroad, how they impact on the African child. That's the only reason we're on tonight.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thanks, brother Scott. Brother Obi, you know, me and Richard was looking over the latest article that you wrote for the Herald, and the first part
propaganda.
I wouldn't call it propaganda, but let me read.
We're being facetious.
Let me read that first paragraph because I want you to expound on this for the listening audience. I think we got a couple calls, so let's condense it a little bit for me. Let me read this.
Thank you for your encouragement and support for those articles.
It's all about sharing information and dispensing information, man. Of course, it's needed. It's needed. Now let me read this because
we get overwhelmed with the articles, you know.
Because the, you know, I think this is timely, especially the quote that you read, the quote that you wrote in the passage, because you know, you just had the special forces that got caught over there in the country that the name escapes me when the when the four Marines got killed and the black man got left but recovered his body 2 days later, and his family still has no explanation to what he was doing there. Let me read this article, this paragraph.
Okay, go ahead.
It says, during the closing session of the Casablanca Conference that took place on January 7th, 1961, Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, who had made Always Leaving Mother Africa's Children with Food for Thought one of his main trademarks, said the following statement: if we do not formulate plans for unity and take active steps to form a political union, we will soon be fighting and warring among ourselves, with imperialists and colonialists standing behind the screen and pulling the vicious wires to make us cut each other's throat for the sake of their diabolical purposes in Africa. Now, if that statement is not apropos to what's going on now, I don't know what is. But talk about that statement in relation to a lot of things.
Well, last Monday, President Mugabe relieved one of Zimbabwe's vice presidents, Emmerson Mnangagwa, of his duties. And that came on the heels of President Mugabe a few weeks ago in Uruguay being given the honor of being a goodwill ambassador from the World Health Organization for the whole African continent, which was rescinded because of Western pressure. But going back to now, Brother Malcolm, since we heard his wonderful voice earlier, in arguably his most famous speech, The Message to the Grassroots, he said, we must submerge our differences to have a united front. Now, one of the things that we must understand is that when you say submerge our differences, that assumes that people understand the differences. And if you don't understand your differences, then our enemies manipulate our differences. And so what I'm saying is, so a lot of times whenever one of the main questions I'm asked about Zimbabwe is, what is President Mugabe's plan? He's 93 years old. What is his plan for succession? And the answer is none of your damn business. And the reason that I say that is because you are supporting a paradigm that the African democratic process is uncivilized in comparison to the Western democratic process, number one. But you need the validation. One of President Mugabe's best attributes is he's impervious to the criticism of U.S. and EU imperialism. He could care less what Trump says. He could care less what Obama used to say. He could care less what the Congressional Black Caucus has to say, who came five votes short of voting unanimously for the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001, the sanctions on Zimbabwe. He could care less. His main responsibility is to keep Zimbabwe empowered, make sure that we keep control of that land and build on that land reclamation program, where 68% of the farming is being done by women. It would be an agricultural metropolis if it wasn't for the sanctions. To make sure that we continue to build on that 97% literacy rate. That's what his responsibility is. And African countries, because of the neocolonialist paradigm, they go bankrupt trying to finance elections instead of building bridges, instead of building schools, instead of building hospitals. So people on the outside looking in have a lot of hostile things to say about Zimbabwe, but they don't know the first thing about Zimbabwe. And our main focus being in the strategic capacity we're in the United States, should be demanding, fighting to get the United States to lift the sanctions. The sanctions are 16 years old. The sanctions have already cost the country $50 billion, just like the blockade on Cuba has cost them $150 billion since 1962. These are resources that will go to, and then when you take a look at the fact that he was they took that title away from him, being the World Health Organization Ambassador for Africa. Some people will say, well, that's just ceremonial. What does that mean? Look at it in this context. Zimbabwe, prior to sanctions, had the number one cholera program in Southern Africa, had the number one net rollout program to combat malaria in Southern Africa, still has had the most significant breakthroughs in HIV/AIDS reduction in Southern Africa, the region of Africa most compromised by the pandemic. At a moment, because of the sanctions, their applications to Global Fund were denied the second round, the third round, the fourth round, and the sixth round, which brings us to our Zimbabwe campaign that we will use the music as a springboard to bring to people's attention. We're calling for a project named after Che Guevara, as this is the 50th anniversary of his assassination, and a brother that y'all may not know about named Samuel Parinyatwa, who was the first indigenous Zimbabwean doctor in the history of that country, who was the vice president of the Zimbabwe African People's Union, the first liberation movement in that country. And we're saying that we need to send medical supplies and medical equipment to the Cuban doctors in Zimbabwe who have been there, and that way we can continue to support Cuba's work in Africa. And this is a challenge to many folks who, for some reason, have the same disposition, even though they will sing Cuba's praises, sing Venezuela's praises, sing Palestine's praises, sing Bolivia's praises, sing Venezuela's praises. I said Venezuela earlier. But when it comes to Zimbabwe, that's where they begin to retreat. And this is part and parcel of white liberals still going through their white supremacist and racist withdrawal because of the disposition of growing up under colonial rule, growing up under capitalist rule, growing up with the slave mentality. They have the slave mentality too, meaning that for them is their divine right to rule the world, conquer the world, rape the world, plunder the world, exploit the world's resources, both human and material. So we're saying that if you're not concerned, I mean, if you're not involved, once again, this is a workstation. If you're not involved in building bridges between Zimbabwe and Africans all over the world, go and find something else to talk about. But if you are curious, if you want to help, the Congressional Black Caucus is right here. Every one of them voted against, in favor of the sanctions. Not one of them voted against them.
They also voted against anything that deals with Africans within their own district, which raises the question.
Exactly. And we make the ties. We make the ties. That's what we got to do.
But raises the question. I think we have to. I believe, and I understand what you're saying as far as the workstation, but I think we have to drill down a little bit more in order to identify why some of us. And let me include myself as far as those who may be just riding by and not putting out the work, even though some of us can claim that we are doing work. Because it seems I remember when you talked earlier about the brother Kwame Ture. One big thing that was occurring in the 80s and from the 70s through the 80s in D.C. was African Liberation Day. That was a major.
And this year we organized. We had a play. We had our play, the only adult play our theater company has ever done. We did a play called Gorillas, Mothers and Wives. And that was about the women of Eritrea, who have the highest level of women's participation in a guerrilla struggle in modern history, not just African history, 33%. And then for those who say, well, what about here? We had a play with the children called The Sisters Who Fought with Their Pens, and it highlighted the work of Margaret Walker. It highlighted the work of Jesse Redmond Fawcett. It highlighted the work of Tony K. Bambara. As a matter of fact, we reenacted the bombing of MOVE because Tony K. Bambara did the best, in many people's opinion, the best documentary on MOVE. So we highlighted the work of Eugenia Collier. So that's what we did because we recognized that using the platform of children's theater, we can begin to restore the dignity to African Liberation Day. Because
I'm gonna call it curious to me, and want us to hopefully unpack it in a few minutes we have or whatever, is the point of, because it seems that and you had mentioned again earlier about generational, right? Mm-hmm. After that, at a certain point, especially during the 90s, war around the time of the Million Man March, the participation of thinking globally in relationship to African liberation was lost, and it became more narrow. So my question to you is your observation of what occurred, because that seems to be what we're trying to do now. And we're asking.
It didn't. What it was. It's a question of people. People have been working. I came of age in the 1990s, so mm-hmm. I was involved in the Million Man March, and there was a Pan-African and international component of that. But it's not, a lot of people don't know about that aspect of it. When we dealt with our work, the children of the 90s, when we shut the country down over the Rodney King verdict, we let it be known it was in harmony with the work being done in Africa against U.S.-installed, European Union-installed military regimes. And in the 90s, we came of age. And then in 1998, I was in a group called the Pan-African Student Youth Movement. We created a military project in tribute to Dr. King and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And we used that as a platform to connect with Africans in Puerto Rico who were dealing with the military base in Vieques. We went down to Panama and met with the Africans in Colon, 2 hours out of Panama City, who gave us who were talking to us about the environmental disasters of the remains of Agent Orange that the United States government had stashed in Panama and the impact it was having in the African communities in Panama in terms of health. We're dealing with the U.S. military base in Libya. So the work was going on. It just wasn't being highlighted. In 2000, we formed a pact. We organized a sit-down between the National Union of Eritrean Students and their Ethiopian counterpart to talk about a youth march in Ethiopia and Eritrea that would go between the troops. In 2001, that's when we became involved in Zimbabwe work. We were doing work with the Africans in Colombia, the first student organization created in Colombia of Africans called Afro Red. So the work never stopped at all. But it's a question of work that gets visibility. But we must make a distinction between visibility and impact.
And I understand what you're saying, and excuse me, Elliot. I just wanted to.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that because the context that you're raising is so important, especially from the Liberation Front perspective, and those who are involved.
Where are you based at?
In Philadelphia, and those who are involved in the Liberation Front. But the question in relationship, like the Council of Independent Black Institutions, when we're talking about the Global African Children's Festival, we know that the council, which were developing those African frame of reference, especially dealing with science, the young people are dealing with science. Mm-hmm. Around the same time, that council of independent African institutions were really educating and doing somewhat similar what you're doing, and not necessarily with theater, but in relationship to science and math.
I've taught in one of them for 27 years, Roots.
I have taught
at Ujamaa.
Right.
Matter of fact, we sent this information to Baye Kemet, who's mm-hmm. based in Trenton, New Jersey, who's the new head of CB. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping, and one of the groups that appeared with us last year and appears with us quite frequently is Farafina Khan, that was established out of Watoto Shule in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Oh, no. So part of that work now, what you're talking about there, is making sure that, and through this process, we want to make our cultural and political expression synonymous.
Right.
Because one of the things that happens is people, but first of all, everything comes from culture. Sekou Touré was correct when he said that culture is the sum total of spiritual and material values obtained by humanity throughout its history. So that is to say that liberation itself is an act of culture. But we're saying that, but what happens, though, is people who are very diligent in their cultural habits make some very reactionary political decisions. That's one dynamic. And then another dynamic is you have people whose political expression is forthright, but they're very culturally intolerant. So we have to merge those two disciplines. And I've been spending a lot of time. Matter of fact, the appeal I mentioned before you started talking about Cuba, I was invited to a group that's based in Washington called Appeal Incorporated, which has national support. And they wanted me to come in because they said we need to look at campaigns where we're not just talking about generating income, generating capital, but can it be connected to something of the ultimate geopolitical significance? So I think that what we do is we identify people who have focus in certain capacities. And because the struggle for African liberation is like the human body, or medicine, so we speak. Some doctors focus on the brain. Some doctors focus on the heart. Some doctors focus on the foot. It's the same thing with the struggle. Some of us deal with modern Africa. Some of us deal with Africa in its antiquity. Some of us deal with Africans in the diaspora. So we have our different concentrations. But the challenge is to come up with activities and projects and campaigns that are not just collective, are not just sustained, but they're focused. And we want this Global African Children's Festival, this is only the second year, we want it to be the cultural complement to African Liberation Day. You target children, you automatically going to organize with more women. When you target children, you're going to organize with more men and men of quality. And what we consider men of quality are men who are in the lives of children, whether it's their own biological children or if they're coaches or their mentors or things of that nature. So what it is when you organize children, the character automatically is mass in its expression, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. That's why
Go ahead, Richard.
Excuse me, brother. The reason why I just wanted to continue to emphasize this, because, again, I think that the strategic intent is on point.
In
relation to the second year of doing this. I'm questioning is that our institutional social formations have become fragmented in those two areas that seem that both of us are raising.
That's true to a degree.
But this process, if I understand it right, gives an opportunity to where those who are doing it in their isolation can come back.
Exactly.
And bring,
but what
and
it
bring
is,
some...
is, you're exactly right. Look, let me tell you. You ever heard of J. Archie Hargraves before?
Yes.
Okay. Man, I had a conversation with him in 1995 that brought me to tears, because one of my closest comrades comes out of the AME Zion Church, and his father was a pastor, just finished Divinity School at Howard, so he was giving him hell. He was saying, man, what you're doing is beautiful on the political front, but you've abandoned the church. So an older organizer, he went to him and said, what can I do? And we had a conference call with Archie Hargraves. And for the listeners who don't know who that is, he was Dr. King's advisor when SCLC came to Chicago to deal with the public housing crisis in Chicago. He also was an advisor to Jesse Jackson. Some people say he helped Jesse write his paper to get out of Divinity School. However, so he talked to us about the difference between the church assembled and the church dispersed. And he said that the church assembled is what we know, people who go to a church, part of the congregation, Bible study, are in church every day of the week. And he said the church dispersed are people who, based on their work, based on their reality, based on their frustration with their pastor, stop going to church. He said, but in their daily walks of life, they clothe the naked, they feed the hungry, exactly, they educate the illiterate, they liberate the oppressed. And he said that the church dispersed is more committed to the objectives of the church than the church assembled. And I say that because our movement, just by makeup and capacity, it's dispersed. So we're in 125 countries, but through a process like this, we can connect the organizations that are doing the work with each other. There are organizations in Philadelphia that are doing the same work that organizations in D.C. are doing, and they have no idea of each other's existence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We and will connect that's them. As a matter of fact, do you know that that was the agreement of the Million Man March?
Right.
Every organization that helped create a local organizing committee was supposed to have a table on the mall to do two things, recruit the brothers into the organizations and the sisters who came, and to network with organizations who prior to that process they had no idea existed. For some reason, that fell through the cracks, but the voter registration table was out there. Ben Chavis made sure of that. So it supported the traditional narrative that voting is the most effective outlet for political expression, which is a whole nother conversation. So what this does is this gives us the opportunity. So what we did is we definitely reached out to the Council of Independent Black Institutions, asking them to organize an activity in their area. And on our platform, like I said, you're more than likely going to see a children's choir. You're going to see Capoeira. It's not just going to be a mass emphasis. And it's the only event in D.C. where you see all these folks who are working with children together on the same platform. So it has that united front character, because that's all we know. So we have a very strong United African United Front leaning when it comes to working in coalition, working in partnership. And you notice we said organizations have the autonomy to organize the event to their liking, based on their needs, based on their realities. They don't have to follow the format in D.C. You want to get some kids out there like we used to do when we were young, shirts and skins, basketball, do that. Double Dutch, do that. As long as it focuses on the African child, and we can use that as a platform to bring a militancy to the narrative that certain formations may not touch, but however they help us. Like, for example, every organization and every community in this country should distribute the research of the Children's Defense Fund. Have you ever looked at it?
I've seen it now, dude. I can't recall.
It is remarkable. They have a breakdown of children who are on school lunch programs, children that drop out, children that get hit by cars. They've got everything about the child. And remember, right now, there are 8,000 children drop out of school in the United States every day. Africans are 800 of the 8,000. So this gives us a chance to say, hey, don't dismiss Sankofa homeschool community in D.C. Don't dismiss Liberated Minds in Atlanta, Georgia. So we bring attention to them. We bring attention to them. This is what we're saying, so that people can see this. So when the carousel of lecturers come through, especially Washington, you're going to learn, you're going to take a look. You're going to look in the face of the laborers.
Let me, because we got at least one or two more before the end of the program. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Brother Obi, yeah.
Where you at?
I'm in Memphis, calling from Memphis, brother.
Oh, yeah. We need you.
Zimbabwe uses U.S. currency, right?
U.S. currency, South African currency, Chinese currency, their local currency.
Yeah, they got the cracker messed up the economy. Now, let me ask you a question. And the question of land, the land issue.
Okay.
I know that Zimbabwe had to begin taking back the land because I think the agreement with England was that England, when they got independence in 1980, England said, "Oh, we're going to buy back the land from the farmers, the white farmers." But
the United States, England and the United States.
But then they said, "Oh, we got a problem in our economy, we got a recession in our economy, and we can't do that right now."
That wasn't the reason.
That was their excuse. So Mugabe said, "Look, to hell with that," and started taking back the land, and took the land. Now, Namibia and South Africa,
yeah.
Where do you see they playing to this now? Because they are facing
Namibia,
that same question.
In Namibia, first of all, in Namibia, if you remember, in 2003, at a Earth Summit in Johannesburg, is where President Mugabe made global headlines for saying, Blair, you keep your Britain and I will keep my Zimbabwe. Sam Nujoma, the former president of Namibia, he said that Namibia was going to embark on the same campaign.
I don't know.
Honesty compels me to say, I don't think they've been as aggressive as Zimbabwe has been. And South Africa, I mean, come on. first of all, no. This is the thing, though. Kwame Ture taught me this, and he told me this was one of my challenges in my 20s. He used to get on me about it. He said, we do not judge reformists by revolutionary standards. We don't judge revolutionaries by reformist standards. The African National Congress, in power since 1994, I challenge anyone, go and find any Nelson Mandela speech or press conference or article where he mentioned the question of land. It's no reflection on Mandela the individual. It's a reflection on the ANC, the organization. They were created in 1912, 3 years after the NAACP, patterned themselves after the NAACP, always followed the civil rights movement in this country. Didn't Luthuli have a bus boycott in South Africa after watching Montgomery? So, no, they're not going to. And matter of fact, that's the reason Mangaliso Sobukwe and the ANC Youth League militants, Limbide, Sebeko, and others, broke away April 6, 1959, formed PAC, and had the slogan, Izweletui, Africa, the land is ours. So the push for land is not going to come from the ANC in South Africa, but the masses in South Africa want the model to be just like the model in Zimbabwe. Because, like I said earlier, 68% of the farming in the rural areas in Zimbabwe is being done by women. And we need to use this opportunity to get Tuskegee, to get Langston in Oklahoma, to get Alabama A&M, Florida A&M, North Carolina A&T. They must not only form partnerships with Zimbabwe, but Southern Africa, because 67% of the workforce in Southern Africa, a region of 14 countries, is tied to agriculture. Is tied to agriculture. So part and parcel of getting the sanctions lifted on Zimbabwe is expanding our understanding of Southern Africa, because the dominant narrative we have reduced the history of Southern Africa to the biography of Mandela and the profile of ANC, which means we don't study Azapo, we don't study PAC, we don't study Frelimo, we don't study MPLA, we don't study SWAPO, and the others that were the former frontline states. So this gives us an opportunity to correct that. That's why our work with Cuba in connection to Southern Africa is another strategic approach to that, because the reason Zimbabwe has a 97% literacy rate is because 3,000 Zimbabwean teachers between 86 and 96 went to Cuba for training. But my purpose for being on tonight, you in Memphis, brother, identify some folks that work with African children in Memphis. They need to have an event on December 9th focusing on the African child, in conjunction with what we are doing in D.C. Please help us find some folks in Memphis. Please help us find some folks in Memphis. Folks in Birmingham, Alabama. We got folks in Selma, Alabama. And we got folks in Montgomery, Alabama. Please help us find some folks in Memphis.
I know another thing towards Zimbabwe, too, is that Zimbabwe is not a poor country in mineral resources.
What part of the Caribbean is home to you? I hear the accent.
I was born in Jamaica.
Hey, fine.
I'm an African born in Jamaica.
We got three albums of music we've done calling for the lifting of sanctions on Zimbabwe and the blockade on Cuba. We need more artists out of Jamaica ready to give us fire, you know.
You gotta help us with that too.
We talked to Muta a while ago, but you know they've been trying to drive a wedge between Jamaica and Zimbabwe. They put out this propaganda saying that President Mugabe attacked the Jamaican men, saying you guys smoke spliffs and drink stout all day long. And a lot of people don't know that in Jamaica, the PNP has always supported Zimbabwe, but the JLP hasn't. That is because the labor parties in the Caribbean have always taken their cue from the AFL-CIO in Washington and the International Labor Solidarity Center, which ain't nothing but a front for the CIA. And as a matter of fact, my brother, the show, The Breakfast Club, not Charlemagne and them, but the University of the West Indies, they haven't had me on in 9 years. They tried to put me on with some Zimbabweans that were working, who have a paper in Zimbabwe. It's called the Zimbabwean. And the people who run that paper, their parents were agents and informants for the Rhodesian security forces during the revolution. And they got a paper in Zimbabwe, and they put them on with me. And I said, I'm glad you've got them on, because you attack Zimbabwe for not having press freedom. And the guy was like, we don't have press freedom. I said, then how can a pig like you have a paper? You have rats, a family full of agents. Your family worked with Rhodesia, and you have a newspaper. If that's not tolerance of an opposing view, I can't think of another example of that.
All right, brother, I got to go. But thank you so much.
Marcus,
thank you.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Hey,
brother Obi.
Hold on real quick.
Richard, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll start winding things down. You know, it was an interesting conversation.
Hello. Yeah. That was KPFT in Houston calling. But no, man. Thank you so much, Brother Elliot, for this.
I'm still here.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity. We're humbled, and we hope what we contributed tonight met your standards as a host.
Well, listen,
met your listeners' standards.
Always when you come.
We don't assume that's the case. That would be arrogant of us to do.
Always when you come on, Brother Over, you got a lot of information, man. But you didn't give the callers a chance to ask you some questions, man. You kept going on.
I'm sorry.
But it ain't no problem.
We answered some questions, though.
I know it.
And Elliot and Brother Over, you know, because, Brother Over, I've been working in this field a while, so I understand you would be the second generation that I've seen a frontline as a means of global African frontline fighters, right? So I don't have no dreamy notion of what we're dealing with, okay? So, but at the same time, because you are a different generation, you have a different perspective, and that's why I think Elliot plays that piece from Malcolm. So what I'm raising the issue that is critical for us to answer, especially because we sit here in the United States and we consider ourselves as global Africans looking for a global African liberation, that we have to understand why we are not getting the traction or what has occurred. And
we're getting traction. Yeah, we're definitely getting traction. But you know what, though? Let me just say one thing about that. Another thing that Kwame Ture taught me, he said, one of the privileges of a fighter that many fighters are not afforded is the privilege of witnessing victory. Let me repeat that. So think of, man, look, Josiah Tongo Gara was the architect of the guerrilla struggle in Zimbabwe. And he died beginning of Kwanzaa, December 26, 1979, in a car crash after they closed down their guerrilla station in Mozambique and were headed back to Harare. He didn't live to see independence on April 1980. No one fought harder than him for the independence of Zimbabwe. Eduardo Mondlane, who trained Samora Machel, was assassinated in Mozambique. He didn't get a chance to see Mozambique gain its independence. And that list goes, Nat Turner didn't live to see chattel slavery defeated. So, no, there are many we don't get a chance to see. And then the other thing, too, is and this is the last example I'm going to use. I met Thomas Sankara's brother at an event in D.C. He said, oh, you're the one that writes the plays of the young people. I said, yes, sir. I said, we got a play about your brother. He grabbed me. You did a children's play about my brother. I said, yes. He said, I got to see it. I said, okay. When he came and saw that play last year, he brought another brother with him. He said, I wouldn't have believed this unless I saw it with my own eyes. So here he was living in D.C. all this time, listening to the radio, being around certain political circles. He had no idea what we were doing. So I'm just saying that some of the best work going on behalf of the people is going on under the nose of the people. But they are demographics of our community that are benefiting from that work and may not even realize they're benefiting from that work. How many people celebrate Kwanzaa that can't tell you something about Karenga?
Understood.
You understand? Nope. So no. So we're fine with it. And we're not, we don't necessarily want the recognition. If we got to choose between having recognition for our work and having, and the work having impact and us not getting a drop of recognition, we choose the latter all day, every day. We're servants. We're servants.
We have to be able to communicate to others so who can be able to know what work is being done. And that's, I believe that's our role. And that's why it's important for us.
And
to
that's
be
why
clear.
Reggie always messing with me when he's on, talking about Brother Obi, all these conferences going in D.C., I don't see your name next to him. I'm probably somewhere working.
Yeah, right.
I'm executing what they're articulating. Maybe I'm not supposed to be there. So, I mean, you know, that's what it is. But for all the people who listened, for all the people who called in, if you know people in your community that work with children, persuade them to organize an event on December 9th. It doesn't have to be real elaborate. It will be connected to something bigger. I just got an email from London while I'm talking to you that they're going to have a pre-Kwanzaa event on December 16th, but they're going to let it be known that they're going to bridge the gap with us. So, I mean, you know, we're working, man, just like you guys. And that's why we love you and respect you so much.
Well, Obi, I'll be in touch, man.
Thank you so much.
Listen, before you go, send me, when you, see, because when you send me a link to the Herald, it's difficult. I can't. Send me the raw copy.
Can I explain that to you?
No, well, we'll talk about it, but just
so you don't think I'm being hard-headed or being a jerk, let me tell you what that's about. My objective for sending out the Herald link is to promote the newspaper.
The Herald. Okay, I understand.
My column.
I understand.
And many people have never read that paper before, and I think the readership in the United States has doubled because of our column and the way we send it out.
Okay.
What I think needs to happen, and we could talk about this off the air, I will introduce you online to my editor. And I think that if you form a memorandum of understanding with the Herald, then there may be a way that you're able to do it, because Charlie Cobb with AllAfrica.com is able to publish the articles with no problem at all.
Okay.
But Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report has given the same reason.
Oh, okay. So, I'm not alone then. I'm in good company.
Yeah, and Solomon Comasong with Your World News. So
okay.
The next step is to get all of you to have these memorandums of understanding with the Herald, the national newspaper in Zimbabwe, so you can not only print Herald articles, you can print Chronicle articles, you can print Patriot articles, and you can even compare and contrast, if that's what you want to do. You can show the opposition media, even though you don't got to do that. The Democratic Party and Republican Party got them covered.
Obi, I want to thank you for being with us, man.
Thank you. Like I said, it's always wonderful, and I love the fact we spread it out, and I just hope I didn't disappoint. And we are looking for you all to join us, man, December 9th. Not in Washington, by organizing an activity where you live at. We love you. We struggle for you. We serve you. Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon, man. Richard.
Yes, sir.
I want to wind things down, but when we come back, we'll spend a few more minutes because I want to kind of reflect on the conversation.
That's great.
We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, and yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, God, God.
Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. This Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology. Glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison just because I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra, a are controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart, abused in a marriage, the brink of holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams, U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing. And the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom, cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib, trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid, where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth, and I know the price is my life, but when I'm gone, they'll sing a song about immortal technique, who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo, while you hanging your flag out your project window.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guest this evening that spent some time with us, Pan-Africanist playwright and U.S. correspondent to the Herald, which is Zimbabwe's national newspaper, Brother Obi Igbona Jr. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir.
You know, before I make some comments on Brother Obi, I just want to say that that cut there was dedicated to Veterans Day. I'll leave it like that.
Uh-oh.
Richard, you know, it was interesting conversation. Brother Obi's a wealth of information, and and sometimes he goes, but when he goes, it's information there, so I don't mind him going.
But
you know, a lot of things that were stated tonight, it's good for our people to hear, because you're hearing from somebody that's there in a lot of these countries that have touched the people that sometimes we read about. I mean, his father was, I don't know whether anybody is familiar with the works of his dad. His dad touching the lives of some of the icons, the historical icons that we read about, and his son walking in the same footsteps. The information that's there is priceless, and it can be utilized. You know, the example that he gave is something that we talked about Friday, Richard, mm-hmm. about us using our situation and politically changing the landscape. And when I'm saying politically, I'm not even talking about no Democrat and Republican type of thing. But I'm talking about something similar to what he mentioned when he said that 68% of the farming going on in Zimbabwe is done by the sisters, by women, mm-hmm. and about agriculture being the dominant production in Southern Africa. And he mentioned that Florida A&M, North Carolina A&T, certain of these black schools need to start producing the type of people that can help the continent. See, that's what we was talking about.
Right. And that's why I like what the project that he's presenting, in the sense of being able to target young people and having them be able, for us to be able to identify what we're doing in relationship to preparing. I think that that word, preparing them as as Africans, because it's only when they are prepared as Africans will they look towards the continent and look at what they're developing in their skills to be able to support in not just the continent, but to create the relationship, because this farmland, we talk about farmland here, where we need African children or generation working the land of what farmers already have. And then that becomes a trade relationship that we can have of different crops going back and forth. Mm-hmm. But we have to prepare those children. And that becomes like the critical component, because unless we prepare them from where we are, they won't go to Texas A&M. They won't go to Tuskegee prepared to do with that mindset. We have to prepare them for where we are. And that's why I thought that is Global African Child Festival, at least where we're focusing on African children and preparing them. That's our responsibility, because we can't assume that they're going to go to school and then know what to do, because we know that other people are tapping into their mind, their consciousness, preparing them to work for them. And that's so I think he's correct, definitely correct in the relationship that me, and that's the starting point. But we have to be about that. So I really enjoy, and given that historical of those, of how you change the narrative, you know, these events wasn't ugly events. Our liberation struggles wasn't ugly events as it relates to America, but was celebratory events. And mm-hmm. that's what children should have in their mind in order to be agents of change.
And, you know, if you think that Obi can go, listen, I've talked with several of the students in the you call it the troop. Right. Those young people, they're sharp, man. And look who's showing them. Look who's teaching them.
Right.
They're sharp. Right. They're sharp young people. And the thing that we talk about the networking. Now, you heard him mention Charles Cobb.
Right.
Charles Cobb was on our program a while ago. He wrote the book, This Nonviolent Stuff Will Get You Killed. Mm-hmm. Him and Kwame Nkrumah started those freedom schools. They was first ones down there in Mississippi and started those freedom schools down there. So now Obi is all down in that area through the help mm-hmm. of Charles Cobb and others, teaching at those freedom schools down in Selma and all down at the bottom of Mississippi. What do they call that? The
Black Belt.
It's not the Black Belt. It's an impoverished area down there where some of our people are in Mississippi. I forgot the name of the area. The listening mm-hmm. audience knows. But he's all down there because it all comes full circle, man. He's networking. He's doing what he can. I take my hat off to the brother. But the mm-hmm. thing that he mentioned, and we also talk about it on this program, that it's things going on, sometimes right in people's cities, that they're totally unaware of.
Right.
And that's why we try to utilize this program, Richard, to get the information out, to bring people together, to let people know what's going on in different parts of the country, and also to let our people know that things ain't as bleak as they might seem. Because if they look at the television and watch the news, and they always showing negative stuff that some of our people are doing, especially the ignorant ones that don't have the sense to know what's going on, and you see this stuff happening, you think that it's no hope, that our people are done, and you can forget it, and run up the red flag, the white flag, surrender. But it's work going on all over, man.
Right, that's it, and that's what I hopefully he understood and the listening audience understood what I was trying to reemphasize, is that those things are going on, and we need to network, as you said, better and identifying each other, because at one point we were constantly aware, it wasn't so fragmented, and we have to get back, at least as he called it, that demographic, because I think now. Because, and it is because of the repressive effort of the militarization, of the global militarization of African people, that these entities now are in isolation compared to networking as they were. You know, and I think that this moment we have to make them aware of each other. And that's what I hear you saying all the time. That's the purpose of this platform, to help in that networking process.
Yeah, they got the advertisements. I heard Brother Jay the other day, or Joe, I'm sorry, talk about these advertisements where they got football players now. They tried to change the narrative. They was kneeling a little while ago. Now they doing all kind of public service advertisements for the military. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your service and all that type of stuff. See, you know, our people got to realize, man, thank you for keeping us free. Our people not free. We haven't been free since we've been here. So how are they fighting for our freedom? What freedom? All the wars that our people fought in for this man, when you came back here, you was in the same situation you was before you left, sometimes worse. Fighting to keep our people free. Our people need to stop spouting some party lines that white people tell us to say.
And that goes to that moral question, because if we even accept that line of thinking, the moral question gets in, how many people had to die around the world for you to have the freedom? And are you saying that you're willing, and this is African people have to raise this question, because African people in America or in the West has been the moral compass for the system of white supremacy. It was only, I mean, the system of white supremacy, I took a people off of the planetary scale as far as being a part of the human family, and destroyed them, and only let them in gradually, right? Now, the question is, for those who are saying that the militarization of the world, the death and destruction for the resources of the world, so that you can have this freedom, are you saying you're willing to, at the expense of all, you know, Brother Obi raised the point, or somebody raised the point, the average age in Africa is 20-something years old? And you're talking about, and the law, and it's 1 billion people? So are we willing to say morally that we are for the militarization, for the death and destruction? We ain't just talking about Africa, South America, the Caribbean. Are we saying that we're willing to accept this freedom, which is not freedom, at that cost for other people's lives?
I don't think our people, you know, we start out the program saying that our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. I don't think our people that spout these stupid party lines about some you died for our freedom and just, I don't think they realize what they're saying half the time. They don't. They don't. Some of our people need to, I mean, just look around, educate yourself. And then maybe we'll stop and start putting together building blocks to really free our people. Then we won't have to talk about some pseudo-freedom that we never had. I'm glad he mentioned about Kwame Nkrumah, and then when they started mentioning about the war was racist, when 33% of the frontline soldiers was black, and our people was only 13% of the population. That goes along with what we already knew about Edison High School here in Philadelphia. Edison High School, inner city high school here in city of Philadelphia, lost more students in the Vietnam War than any other high school in this country. Not any other high school in the city of Philadelphia. Any other high school in this country. Edison lost more, and Edison is a black school, was black, and still is. Lost more students out of one high school than any other high school in this United States. So when Obi quoted that figure that Kwame Nkrumah was talking about, that the 33% of the frontline soldiers in Vietnam War was black, and we only 13 or 14% of the population, then you do the math. Or anybody do the math.
That's it. It's important for us to be able to make the distinction of, and I you know, I ain't expecting all Americans of African descent to recognize that they're not a part of the European or white supremacist global structure. Because I've always said I believe it's a large percentage that have bought into it, and I am not thinking that it's just here. When we talk about colonialism and neocolonialism, that there is a large percentage of African leaders who control states.
Certainly.
That have bought into the project of global white domination. But for those who haven't, and I think Brother Obai's characterization about, about a building site, and you're driving in your car, and unless you're going to get out and be a part of the building, just take the detour. But there's a lot of people who are driving in their car and recognize that the door is open for them to be a part of, which is what they want to do, to be a part of that building process, and that the gate is open for them to come in and pick up a brick.
Yeah, it's not closed.
Put down a pen.
You're right.
Give a thought in the sense of how to continue to build this, and that they can be able to be a participant, then more than just a dreamer or a driver and just going on by. And that's what we have to, that's what we're looking for those who in there, what they say, the hearts of hearts, knowing that, just looking for that opportunity, that these places, these building sites are there for them to get involved in. And this here activity raised is one. I've been saying to you, Elliot, that year of the African child. I mean, I want every year, that June 16th, I don't see why in Philadelphia that hasn't been something that, especially those African-centered schools,
okay,
have taken on as acknowledgement of helping to cultivate the global outlook of African children in Philadelphia, Chicago, New York, Newark, Mississippi, to be able to look at the continent. That's, and they're part of knowing that they are part of a broader. I know, and here they have the dessert club that goes to Kemet, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are something we can be able to participate in to help in the community, helping in raising and developing the consciousness of these children, African children, early. Not wait until they get 50 and say, oh, now I understand what it is to be African.
Wow. Richard, look, we're coming up on the end of another program. And you know what? You got to get out. I know you do. So we're going to wind things down. The week starts off tomorrow with African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Tune in, catch African Perspectives at 11 a.m. tomorrow to 1 in the afternoon. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. On Wednesday, Sister POC is back with Revive, which is Wednesday evening, 8 to 10 p.m. On Thursday, ULU, Us Lifting Us, Black Economic Empowerment Program, is on from 10 o'clock. From 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock on Thursday evening. Friday evening, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Friday evening. And Saturday, SST with Troy Wilmore, Saturday morning sports talk at 10 a.m. to 12 noon, and then Saturday afternoon from 4 to 6. A Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And again, more programming will be added this month. And from what I understand, from some conversations that I've had, next month and probably the 1st of January, at least one or two more programs to Time for Awakening. So that information drumbeat is going to continue on. And I'm happy about that, because the spread of information is necessary among our people. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. And also thank our guest, Obey Bona Jr. Lively discussion as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware. Have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. To play such a small part of the thing that they'll soon be right at the heart of. My little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. She got to teach school. If we know, all we say we know about the problems. Oh. Why can't we do something to try and solve it?
To save the children.